Welcome to Outside the Lines, a podcast of our host Bob Cheviar and his co-host Scott Shannon. Bob and Scott are longtime teaching pros in Westchester County, New York. They have both been ranked in the top 15 nationally in men's 35 and 40 and over singles and doubles. Bob is also the author of Deconstructing Tennis, the 4D System. Together, Bob and Scott investigate many of the hidden secrets of playing good tennis, as well as offering their expert commentary on professional tennis.
Yeah, welcome all. It's Bob Cheviar here, your host of Outside the Lines, and I'm here with my co-host, Scott Shannon. And today's subject is how to begin a match. And Scott, since we're going to do this one, I want to give our listeners the idea that they're going to get the full picture. So once you know that we're talking about how to begin a match, what other podcast comes to mind?
Well, you and I did one that spoke about preparation before you get on the court for a match, you know, almost like a pre-match ritual. I know you had a very specific and well-detailed pre-match ritual and routine. And I think that probably served you well, because I think you were the player that when you came out of the gate, you were playing pretty confidently and you had a strategy and you knew how you wanted to begin. And a lot of that had to do with what you were doing prior to actually getting on the court.
So, yeah, we're going to reinforce some of that today. What I was hinting at was our next podcast after this one is how to finish a match. Because players have, I think, equal, some are better at starting and not as good at finishing, and vice versa. And that's a whole other subject in and of itself that we are going to be touching on. But let's stick to how to begin a match right now. And I think an important part of that is to realize that the way you think to yourself, and this, you know, we did talk about it with the nerves podcast, but the way you talk to yourself leading up to the match is key for being ready for how to begin the match. And I'll give a couple of examples. I've just started reading this biography of Woodrow Wilson, and he was not a very good student. And his father was a minister and very involved with giving lectures and speeches and everything else, and was not really that happy with the way Woodrow was turning out. But Woodrow ended up getting into Princeton, and he spent 1 year at Princeton, and he came home for the summer, and he and his dad started having their evening talks and playing billiards in the basement. And his father turned to him after a week and said, "You have discovered all that you need to learn. You have discovered that you have a mind." And I know all of our students have minds. I don't think all of them really accept how important it is in tennis to have a mind, and how many parts of it go unused that could readily be tapped. So I think that's one part of preparing. And the other quote I wanted to give before we get into it is, when my book first came out on Amazon, I had a doctor who was a brain surgeon out in California bought it. And his comment was, "What you describe is exactly what I do before brain surgery. The most important moment is just before I make my first incision. In other words, it's all planned out and mapped out, and all the tools are ready and in place, getting ready to go. So you know how so many pros use the phrase, Scott, it's not rocket science. Well, now we can tell them, but it is brain surgery.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that people have probably heard it by now, if they've been playing long enough, is that experienced players will often say, like, remember, it's an intellectual game. It's basically like playing chess, but you have to do a lot of execution to make the moves work like a chessboard. So you have to have ball control and, you know, athletic ability, but, you know, the rest of it is in your mind. So the intellectual aspect of it is really, really a large part of what really happens, especially when you're involved in playing a match.
For sure. So one thing I think all the players need a little more experience with is, how do you deal with it when your opponent is someone that you've played before? And let's review the situation, Scott, where you've played a person before. Let's say it's not me and you've beaten them. How do you go about getting ready for that rematch?
What I do is I think back to, you know, basically what was the difference between my play and my opponent's play that allowed me to win the match. Was he making unforced errors at certain times, or a certain kind of stroke was weak or was prone to an unforced error? Did I get more mileage and results out of attacking him when I had the chance because I have a good attack game and I don't want to stay back at the baseline forever? Sometimes even I would want to know that if I drew him into the net, that was something that he might be uncomfortable with, and then I could use that against him. And, you know, what was it that really happened in that match that gave me the upper hand? So I would want to be able to remember, you know, what went on so that I could use the same formula, because it was a winning formula, at least at the start of the match, I could, you know, have something in my pocket there to use that I was confident that would be effective.
Yeah, you know, what you just said is so important, but it all lies, first, it lies in the fact that players need to do better remembering how they beat someone. They can remember the person, but if you actually say to them, you know, you played 18 months ago, how did you beat them? It's no longer there in the memory. It is so valuable to keep that information on file so that when you start the match and you were the one that won the first time, the other guy immediately gets the feeling, oh my God, here we go again.
Right.
It just makes getting across the finish line that much simpler.
Hey, Bob, don't you think that it would be worthwhile for our listeners to, because they're going to have this coming across players again from time to time, if they're very active players, to jot down on an index card a few highlights of the match when they play someone, you know, write their name and then the date of the match, what surface it was on, and then just make a brief description of, you know, what went well, what worked against that particular player. And, you know, just kind of documenting the things that were happening on a positive level and or a negative level. And you can kind of use that when you come across them again, and you don't have to rack your brain. You have it to read. So you make like a little index file. So I used to make notes at times about, you know, certain things that I wanted to remember.
Okay. What did you say about me?
I said, this guy is just so freaking cagey from the baseline. I don't think I'll ever beat him on outdoor clay.
Okay. So how about the reverse situation, Scott? Let's say you're going up against someone who's beaten you the last time you played or a couple times that you played. How do you approach that as the underdog? Do you pretty much say, my odds aren't good? Or are you looking for a real solution to the problem?
Yeah, I think if you say my odds aren't good, I think you're kind of being in a defeatist mode at that point. So I would stay away from that kind of thought or saying that. You know, you have to figure that you, again, have to understand what went on in the match and have a memory that gives you some information. And then you have to make some changes. You know, you have to, you know, change your tactics and create some new tactics and, you know, do something that's going to throw him a curveball or, you know, or clean up something that he capitalized on in the previous match. So, you know, it has to be very analytical, and then you have to come up with a new strategy. It doesn't have to be 100% new strategy, but you have to make some changes and, you know, use that previous match to help you make those changes so that you can get ahead of your opponent.
Absolutely. And I mean, one thing, you know, if you've lost to someone is if you had a particularly bad day that day. In fact, your opponent may be a little bit complacent in that case, thinking like, oh, this guy, I'm going to cruise through. But you know, you didn't really show up. It happens to everybody on that particular occasion. And when the rematch comes, he's going to be in for a little bit of a shocker. And I think it's incumbent upon you there to let him know as soon as you can in the match, whatever you were calculating, you're going to have to go back to the drawing board because that's not going to do it for you this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have to have a good talk. The other thing that can be used at times is talk to some of your friends who are players who are also involved in the competitions and league play or tournament play, and maybe pick their brain and ask them, like, you know, what do you think is a good way to play this guy? I had trouble the last time with them. You know, what are your thoughts on how to play, you know, this particular opponent? Because very often you'll get some insights from other players who have different points of view.
Absolutely. So listeners, this sort of mental preparation to get yourself really set to play, have a plan, be calmed down, that's all so important. And I just want to give a counterexample from very, very good player. But here was a situation that occurred maybe 5 or 6 years ago with, I had a female student who was very, very good, and she's gone since from 4-5 to 5-0. But here was our situation. She was experiencing a slump following a vacation. Time away from the game had taken the edge off of her play. She asked me what she could do. Linger at contact with your eyes, I said. See yourself making ideal contact. She immediately changed the subject to a list of problems. I'm pushing my backhand. My serve is off, but I can fix that on my own. Don't know why I mentioned it. I'm missing the shots which I can always rely upon. I don't know if I should be coming to the net more. And she went on and on with a list, a laundry list of problems. She needs to find a way to a quieter place. How does a player go about going from these thoughts to finding a more quiet place, Scott? Did you have any trick for that?
I think that you have to be able at this point to control what's going on in your head. And very often getting alone or getting away from other people, getting some, you know, music in your head and your, and get headphones on and, you know, listening to music is something I think that so many players do to help them. And also, you know, you can use some guided meditations and breathing exercises and just get your mind off of all of that and just get relaxed, because you can't fix it that close to the match. Some things you can do and whatever, but I would say that her conversation with you, was that a conversation with you that she was having?
Yes.
Yeah, I think she should have had that like a week before or 3 days before and go over all that stuff and have you, like, you know, deconstruct it and, you know, get her to kind of not deal with some of the problems in terms of what the answers were, but also just kind of get the nervous rhetoric out of that, you know, because you could just tell that she was freaking out.
Yes. So here's,
and tell her don't go on vacation either.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yep. No more family vacation. So imagine now that you have watched, there's a show that's streaming on Netflix, and you have watched the first 6 episodes and your wife hasn't. And then you say to her, honey, tonight, let's you and I watch episode 7. Mm-hmm. What kind of reception do you think you're going to get to that request?
Thanks a lot. Why didn't, you know, where were you asking me at episode 1? So, you know, how am I going to catch up? I'm not going to understand anything. Yeah, you're not going to have a very happy spouse there.
Yes. So similarly, this is what I find happens with many players. They play a match and the match is like an episode. But once you've played a few matches, you have a theme for the series that you're watching. If the player does not begin to connect the episodes from each one isolated to an overall theme, it's very difficult to progress as a player, and it's difficult to really be prepared for your next match because it seems like an island out unto itself rather than connected to a bunch of other things that you've already done. Do you like that analogy?
Yeah. I'm not sure that I've ever really thought about it totally in that way, but I mean, I think that that on a more natural level, that's the way that I, you know, would play when playing a lot of tournaments and having matches, you know, every other week. But I think that's a great framework to put it in, Bob. And, you know, now that we're starting to talk about actually when you are beginning the match, right?
Yes.
I think we should emphasize to our listeners that I think that we should look at it like you're running a race, like let's say a cross country race, and you have 2.5-3 miles to cover and all kinds of challenges. And you have to pace yourself. You know, you can't start off too fast and then take a big lead and then have nothing at the end. So you have to have an understanding of how you can run the race, because some people can be strong starters and that lead will help them. And sometimes they can maintain it and finish and win the race. But very often, good runners will start off and they'll be slow and they'll be or slower and they'll stay back in the pack, and then they have fantastic finishing ability and they have this big kick and they go past all these other guys who or people who have run out of gas, and they win the race very often. So players have to know that you don't just start off at a high speed and, you know, you don't show your opponents all of your good stuff at the beginning of the match. You kind of, you know, take a measured approach and you don't make a lot of errors. You get to see what's going on for that player on a given day. So even if you know this player, Bob, from a previous match, or, you know, I mean, a lot of times we've seen each other play so many times, we know our games. You have to make sure you take a look at them and say, okay, what do they look like they're doing today? Do they look energetic? Do they look like they're on? Do they look like, you know, very positive? Do they look like, you know, they're really going to be in this match? Read their body language, get an idea. But also just make sure that you don't, you know, blow your wad like early in the match.
Mm-hmm. So what about the flip problem of someone who says, Scott, I understand what you're saying, and I'm going to start the match and I'm not going to miss a ball. But then in doing that, they slow the game down so much, they fail to show the quality that they possess.
Well, I think that it's a gradual evolution in the match. I think that you have to start out slower and not make errors, make the other player hit a lot of balls and see how that works out. And, you know, if you're really starting out too slow and the other player is really hurting you with their shots because you're really not doing enough with yours, then you have to start stepping it up and you can start increasing it. But you shouldn't wait until like the fourth or the fifth game of the first set to do that if it's pretty one-sided. So, you know, keep an eye on like what's really happening. But I just don't think that you can accelerate the level of it too fast, depending on what kind of player you are, and get a lot out of it. So I think I would be careful about that.
Okay, so we have a little bit of a disagreement here, because I'm a big believer in something I call creating freedom. And what that means is I see a lot of players who in the warm-up are extremely polite and they hit the ball very easily right to their opponent time and time again, let the opponent get their timing, which is fine, but none of those players who warm up like that actually get the racket speed going. So then when the match starts, it's as if they're constrained. To me, in the warm-up, you need to create some freedom by being nice, 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 and then nail one. So you feel like if you need your other gear, it's there for you, even at the start of the match. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's actually a good point. But I would add that as often as you can, you need to come to the venue and try to get some hitting in on another court well before or somewhat before your match starts. Indoors, that may be much more difficult because you don't have enough courts to do it on. But I would agree that you can pop a few in the warm up, but I mean you certainly can't do something where the other player doesn't get like a reasonable chance to hit the ball and get their game going. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you give them. Yeah,
you pop one once in a while. I mean, you hit big serves sometimes in warm up. You know, you'll try, to hit your faster serves. So, I think that creative license and creative freedom, I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, let's just oppose that idea for a second. To people who go on the court and say, I don't want to show them what I've got. I've got game like you wouldn't believe, but they're not going to see it in the warm-up.
I think it's nonsense.
Now we're agreeing on something. I think it's nonsense. Yes. Show them whatever. And if you can hit some really good shots in the warm-up, for most people, not our level, but most people, they're going to be like, oh, wow, I'm in big trouble today when they see that quality coming off the racket.
So
we're in, the match has now gone a couple of games, and we've started with a game plan. One thing that I think is crucial right at the start of the match is we were talking about when you said before, remembering how you beat someone, but when you play someone new, you're doing what I call building an inventory. You're noticing how the points are progressing. Are they long or short? Are you winning or losing? Is the opponent hurting you more with their forehand or their backhand? So I had an interesting example the other day in my high-level women's singles group where two players met for the first time. And the one who's played with me for quite a few years, after three games, she, on the changeover, because we always talk, this is part of the learning, she said, I can't tell if her forehand or backhand is better. Okay. And I was like, wow. Because what happened was on the first 2 points of the match, she got in nice three-quarter speed serve, didn't go for her biggest, right to the forehand, and both of them were mishit long by about 10 feet.
Oh.
And then they had a bunch of close points back and forth. But to me, that mishit sound and the errors coming off of that side was leading me to say, I've got to get the ball more to my opponent's forehand. Would you agree? Do you think that's enough of a signal that you'd be noticing that right at the start of the match?
Yes, but I would test it. I would make sure to test it out a little bit more and see if it wasn't just a little bit of an anomaly, and make sure, because you want to be able to go over there with confidence and know that you're going to get some kind of a negative result, or positive result for you, that you're gonna be able to do some damage. So I mean, you got to pick up on those things and then test them out, and then you can make conclusions and say, that's definitely a problem for her. And, I should take advantage of it when there's an important time.
Yeah. So see, as the level gets better, like I said, this was a pretty high level match. So it's not like all this player had to do was hit it to the forehand and she'd get the point.
Right. Was it a 4-5 match?
Yeah, I would say 4-5 match. She, it was more complicated than that. She had a move it around and then, pull her wide and this and that in order. And then sooner or later, even a couple winners came off the forehand, but they were counterbalanced by even a couple more mistakes. So it's not always so easy to spot, but that margin is smaller and smaller as you go up the tennis ladder and play against higher and higher quality opponents.
Yep. And you have to learn as much as you can about these opponents during the match and whatever, and then get some kind of a memory and whatever, because you're going to be seeing them again. So it's just good to have like a encyclopedia of players.
Yeah. So let's just go back before we say goodbye for this episode. Did you ever go through a period yourself where you were struggling with your pre-match thought process, where you felt like you were getting in your own way?
No, I can't remember there being any specific time when I felt like I was getting in my own way. Only if I was like just not being disciplined about preparing for the match. Because if you're prepared for the match and also getting there earlier, used to get there early and hit with John James a lot. And so when we started our matches, we were like, oh yeah, we're already in the rhythm. We're ready to go because we've done the work. We got here early and we have some discipline.
Yes.
So you know, sometimes if I didn't do that, that would make me feel, oh, not really totally ready.
You're absolutely right. If players, you mentioned it before, but it's worth saying again, if you can even get a 10 or 15 minute hit in before the start of your match, the way you first appear on the court is going to be another level different, and it's well worth investing in. Absolutely. So listeners, I hope you've picked up something about how to begin a match. And like I said at the start, our preview for our next podcast is how to finish a match. You've got the lead. How do you take it across the finish line? Scott, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Bob. And we'll see everybody next time, or you'll hear us next time.
I'm back. I just realized I did not add a key component of what I believe is important in starting a match. You must come out, we have 5 gears, hitting in third gear for sure, not pushing the ball in second gear. And here's the reason why. If you access your third gear shot and it's working, you will have it for the rest of the match, and you probably will need it to win against a quality opponent. If you start too slowly, you're not going to have the firepower to take them down. There's another part, though, to the start of a match, which is crucial, which should give you the freedom to do this. Actually, two things. The first one is, the points at the start of the match are not as important or nearly as important as the points played late in a set or late in a match when the score is close. So in effect, you're being given the opportunity to practice what you want to do at virtually zero cost. This is a key idea for how to get started. And I could only go back to cite Bjorn Borg, who frequently, as a great champion, would be down 3-1, and then all of a sudden the match would turn. He was investing in the future. He was learning. Point number two, it certainly is possible, because nerves are there at the start, that you might miss a couple of shots. But any players who have practiced the right way know how to self-correct. Simply because you miss a couple of shots at the start doesn't mean that the rest of the day is doomed and you can't play your way into form. So let's start with the right gear. Let's go for it just enough to let your opponents know they're in for a tough day. Thank you.